Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, I am just so happy to have back to the program for his second appearance, author, visionary, and pioneer in the field of energy psychology, Dawson Church. He is here today to talk about his new book, which he co-authored with Norman Shealy, Soul Medicine, Awakening Your Inner Blueprint for Abundant Health and Energy. Dawson Church has edited or authored many books, including The Genie in Your Genes, which is now being considered a classic text on epigenetics. He has collaborated on pieces of writing with many of the leading voices of our time, including Larry Dossey, Bernie Siegel, Carolyn Mace, Neil Donald Walsh, Gay Hendricks, and countless others. His anthology, The Heart of the Healer, was one of the key books to spark the debate on mind-body medicine. And his latest anthology, Healing the Heart of the World, explores the links between planetary and personal wholeness. He is the director of Soul Medicine Institute, which studies the effects of energy psychology on health and sports performance. And you can find out more about Dawson through his website, soulmedicine.net. So I just want to get right into this interview. Welcome to the program, Dawson.
Good to be here, Juanita. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so congratulations yet again. Another fantastic book. It looks like you've been quite busy since we were last talking about Genie in Your Genes.
What happens is there's an explosion now of research into these kinds of spirit-mind-body interventions, and so there's lots of new material to write about and exciting new discoveries and breakthroughs happening. So there's lots on afoot.
Yeah. So how did this collaboration with Norman Shealy take place?
I've known Norm Shealy since the early 1980s, and he's been a real central figure in the holistic medicine field. He actually was the founder of the American Holistic Medicine Association, and he has been a leading light in this whole area for many years. And he also has insisted on rigorous documentation and proof for these miraculous healings. So whereas most of us in research have heard these very moving stories of people who've said, my cancer went away after energy medicine. I was talking to a guy last week who said he was in hospital for chronic liver failure in line for a liver transplant, and he had a laying on of hands experience off which his liver was healed. I mean, all these stories. But what Norm did starting in the 1970s was he began to say, these stories are great, but we need verifiable scientific proof. We need a doctor's diagnosis before and a second one afterwards showing the person no longer has this disease. And we need that kind of rigorous proof to show that these things really happen. So that was a real contribution Norm has made. And so what we do in the book Soul Medicine is we gather together all the scientific facts and help people separate out what's scientific and what's fallacy in this whole field of energy medicine, energy psychology.
So do you think that it's this kind of documentation and these kind of case studies that really put forth the science of these kind of healings that is going to basically make the leap for people and the whole Western medicine field into energy psychology and these modalities?
You bet. Think about if you're an HMO. Think about if you're Kaiser Permanente, which is a big HMO with 9 million members. And you have the biggest challenge, of course, we face in Western medicine is cost, the spiraling upward costs of treatment. Now, if you're a big HMO and you do a randomized double-blind clinical trial, which is a very high standard of scientific proof, if you do a trial that shows you that if people use energy psychology, they use your services less, they have lower rates of cancer or diabetes or heart disease or whatever, you can imagine that's of enormous interest to these kinds of institutions. So, yeah, increasingly I'm finding that big institutions are very interested in this work because it shows them how they can dramatically lower their costs as their people are healthier. So, yeah, cost is a large factor driving this, as well, of course, the fact that people want to be healthy. People want to feel good. They want to be relieved of their diseases, their psychological problems. So it really works for the individual, but it works also for these big hospital chains and HMOs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's interesting how, you know, you just kind of touched on that it is incredibly empowering for people to take their health into their own hands in this way.
Yes. Oh, it's if you can make a difference, for example, say you have suffered from migraines, and we have lots of cases we've now of people with migraines who do energy psychology, and in just a few minutes their migraine headache goes away, or if they suffer from anxiety or depression. So if you know that you have a tool that can very quickly shift you from being sick and unhappy into being significantly healthier and happier, you're very strongly motivated to use it. And so once people discover that they have some kind of handle, some kind of control over their feelings in this way, one group especially I love working with, and that is veterans, people who are veterans of Iraq or Vietnam. Once they discover that maybe for the first time in 30 or 40 years that their nightmares go away, their insomnia goes away, their digestion improves, their headaches can go away, all of these physiological improvements and psychological improvements, just as a result of these simple self-help techniques, they are thrilled.
Are you seeing any modalities in particular that are helping with the PTSD?
The big one that I use is called EFT, mm-hmm. or Emotional Freedom Technique. And it's a simple set of exercises. There are 14 points on the body that it uses. So you remember a psychological trauma, an emotional issue you have, and while you're recalling that emotionally triggering event, of course, in the case of an Iraq veteran, it might be witnessing a battle, might be a severe combat memory. What you do is, while you remember the event, you are then tapping these 14 points on your body, and just tapping these trigger points, these stress release points, in a quite striking way, releases the emotional intensity behind the memory. So you slow the memory, but the emotional intensity diminishes. And so this is the main technique that I'm using.
I have heard amazing things about EFT, and it basically, I think I started hearing about it maybe 2 years ago, but it is just, it's huge right now. Where did it come from?
There are millions of people that use it and are on the EFT mailing list, and it came from an interesting set of observations. And that is that when human beings are under stress, like somebody hears some bad news and they have the shock, they say, oh my goodness, and they put their hand on their chest. Well, that's one of those spots you touch on your chest naturally when you're under stress helps relieve people's tension. And what these very observant people noticed was that if you touch or tap all 14 of these points in sequence, it has a big stress reduction effect. And EFT was developed by an engineer called Gary Craig, who was looking for a very quick and direct way of releasing most emotional issues. Now, it doesn't always work on absolutely everything, but it works very well on almost everything, almost all the time. And so it's a quick sort of one-size-fits-all therapy for releasing emotional tension. And it's simply so effective and so easy to learn that just people all over the world have learned it very quickly, and it's not even being taught sometimes in psychology classes in universities.
Mm. I wonder if that is going to change the existing model of psychology that we have today, that people can go through years and years of talk therapy and basically get to the same point as maybe a few sessions of EFT.
Yeah, they know themselves very well after years of introspection or talk therapy or contemplation, but they may not necessarily have a way of changing themselves. So just knowing why we're messed up the way we are is very useful sometimes,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't necessarily help you change. And one of the big frustrations is that people take a stress reduction class or go to a Buddhist meditation retreat or read a self-help book or take a workshop at Esalen and suddenly think that they're going to change. And what we find is that our psychological conditioning is so well entrenched that it's very, very difficult to change. And just knowing why you are the way you are doesn't necessarily mean you have any kind of leverage over becoming a different person. And what EFT offers us is, with EFT, you literally take these persistent psychological issues. For example, these Vietnam veterans. There's one case study I was reading last night of this Vietnam veteran who watched this teenager walking toward his platoon. And as this teenager, this boy, got closer, the Vietnam veteran saw that he had a grenade in his hand and that he pulled the pin out of the grenade. And so the Vietnam vet said to him, "Stop!" And the kid just kept walking. So the veteran screamed at him again, "Stop!" And the kid kept walking. Then the Vietnam veteran fired shots into the ground in front of the kid's feet, and the kid just kept walking toward this guy's platoon. And then the guy shot him. He shot and killed the teenager with a grenade. And so he's had nightmares, he's had flashbacks, he's had all kinds of horrible memories about this for, and again, this happened 35 years ago, but what he found with EFT was after just one session of EFT, all of his guilt and anguish and pain disappeared. He still had the memory, but no longer was causing him all this emotional trauma. So this is the kind of power we find in these therapies. And again, it's miraculous, people who may have been haunted by maybe a childhood rape or a childhood beating, or you know, we all have horrible things often in our past, and actually feel at peace with yourself and feel calm even despite these traumatic things that happened to you. That's a real gift we can give to people.
Yeah, that is really incredible. Okay, so for our audience, help us understand what soul medicine and awakening your inner blueprint really mean.
Well, what we looked at in the book Soul Medicine was what is common to all of these many therapies. And there are these various kinds of therapies that use intention, consciousness, energy to heal. But we wanted to look, step behind the individual therapies and look at what was common to all of them. So things like acupuncture, acupressure, aromatherapy, chiropractic, osteopathy, meditation, contemplation, laying on of hands, faith healing, prayer, light therapies, biofeedback therapies, all these things. What are some of the common aspects to them? And what we found was there are three things we could think of that were common to all of them. And those were that they all used intention. They all used intention and the intent of healing. They all worked in some way through consciousness to have that effect. And that they all used energy and affected the energy body of the human being. So they weren't like homeopathy. There's no way you can explain homeopathy by its physical effects, mm-hmm. because there's nothing left of the original substance. It's been so diluted that the energy of the substance appears to still be there and have an effect. So those are the three commonalities, energy, consciousness, and intention.
So how do you then rationalize, maybe to a lay audience, the tangible benefits of these kind of therapies that are really quite intangible in their concept?
Yeah, that has been a strike against them in terms of research in the past. The way you rationalize it is you do what we call outcome studies. And so, for example, you take two groups of people. Well, you take a group of people and you divide them into two groups, and they have the same kind of condition. For example, severe anxiety. And you then treat them using an energy therapy and see which group does better. Does the group that gets the drug get better? Or does the group that gets the energy therapy get better? And that these kinds of outcome studies allow you to determine that. So right now we have either done outcome studies or are working on new ones with things like Iraq veterans with PTSD. I have charts here on my office wall. I pasted these up about a week ago showing enormous drops in PTSD among Iraq and Vietnam veterans. So things like the post-traumatic stress disorder can go way down. There's just been a clinical trial in a medical journal of fibromyalgia showing it diminishes greatly.
Wow.
with EFT. Mm-hmm. Anxiety, test anxiety with kids has been shown to drop dramatically. We're testing things like cortisol levels. Cortisol is your main stress hormone. And when you're under stress or think a stressful thought, your cortisol level can rise. And certainly if you have a flashback or a nightmare, your cortisol level can jump way up. And so, again, with these randomized clinical trials, we test people's cortisol. We find, for example, that it drops almost twice as much after EFT as it normally would. So these kinds of trials are showing us, giving us very practical medical evidence of the real effects of these energy shifts. Not only are they having an effect, but they're often having a huge effect on your biology. So it isn't just like, you know, a 5% change or a 3% change. Sometimes it's a tripling. There's one famous study done of people's beliefs, and this very distinguished psychiatrist was looking at the effect of belief on our immune system, and she found that people with certain kinds of negative beliefs have three times the effect on their immune systems as those with positive beliefs. So a far bigger effect than any drug could produce.
That is incredible. And this is, you've listed in Soul Medicine, this, it's a really fascinating list of limited personality nature and soul nature. And it sounds like this is kind of what you're talking about, where you have the negative characteristics and greed and fearfulness, anger, that sort of thing. And then on the other side, joy, trust, honesty, self-respect, and you talked a little bit about how the one is very stressful, and it goes through this cascade that ends up leading to physical exhaustion.
Yes, absolutely. There are real physical consequences to staying in that negative state for a long time. We also have in Chapter 10 of Soul Medicine, we have something called the Soul Medicine, Soul Connection Inventory,
mm-hmm.
where we have a 50-question questionnaire that we have people take that actually shows them how deeply connected they are with things like nature, with God, with their spiritual side, with their soul. And that's a really useful instrument, because once you've gone through that test, you can then say, gee, you know, I'm really good at say, prayer, but I don't have a vibrant connection with nature. So you can then strengthen the areas that you don't have a good connection with. So we try to give people practical tools. Like another thing we do in the book is Chapter 14. It's called How to Find Your Ideal Practitioner. And we actually walk people through, well, how do you separate the fake practitioners? Because there are all kinds of people saying, well, I do energy medicine or I do healing. How do you separate the good ones from the bad ones?
Mm-hmm.
How do you, and then, of course, once you found a good one, how do you work with your doctor, your psychiatrist, psychologist, and with your energy healer? How do you make all these work together for your healing? So we try to give people real practical guidelines here that are medically sound, and that don't distract people from conventional medical treatment, but also really help them engage all these energy tools for their own well-being.
And be able to decide which one will benefit them the most for their situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, try them, see which ones work for you.
So what kind of potential problems do you see, Dawson, in this budding field of soul medicine and energy psychology that is really, in a way, very unregulated with so many modalities? So many people considering themselves healers, you know, how does one sift through, like you say, which are the good ones and which are the not so good ones?
I think it's essential to do that sifting. It is hard. I go to some conferences, and I won't name them, but
mm-hmm.
there are exhibit halls full of potions and devices, and
yeah.
they're making all these claims, you know. Mrs. A.H. from Tampa, Florida says, I tried the, you know, dot, dot, dot machine, and it totally, you know, took away my cancer.
Yeah.
I just shudder when I see those kinds of claims, because there's no scientific proof behind them. There's no evidence. There's something called evidence-based medicine, and that is, it's a crucial concept nowadays. We need evidence to show these things work. If they work, it's not that hard to get evidence. And if there's no evidence, I would simply conclude that you need to tread very, very cautiously in using this thing. So the research base is getting built up, and for example with EFT, we now have a lot of research that is either in progress or has been published or presented that shows it works for various things. But we're really still at the beginning of understanding. I mean, we've just begun to grasp how incredibly potent this energy tool is and started to research it. And over the next, I think, 10, 20 years, we'll see a lot more work, a lot more evidence appear for how to apply it to specific conditions. There, for example, there's a group of people who has incurable cancer, and they've asked me to help them use this and help assess the effects on their conditions. So how will it work for them? We have no idea. We'll know in 2 or 3 years. So it takes a while to figure this out.
Mm.
But I think there are a lot of very inflated claims out there. And I would, again, tread very cautiously. And that chapter in soul medicine tries to help you figure out, separate the wheat from the chaff, and which therapies really work, what will work for you, and how to work with your doctor.
Now, in Chapter 6, you also talk about characteristics of a master healer, and I'm interested to find out why you found it either necessary or what your interest was in going in depth into that topic and what we can learn from the commonalities found in master healers.
Yes, and we've all seen or heard about people like, for example, John of God in Brazil, that seem to have remarkable healing powers. And there are lots of stories of people. There are also famous faith healers in the Western tradition, like Catherine Kuhlman. And one of the famous images I remember from a crusade of hers was seeing huge piles of crutches that people had discarded after her services.
Wow.
So, you know, we look at some of the people like this through history and we think have been remarkable healers. And, of course, there are many of them, too, who have abused their power or whatever. But we try and find the genuine ones or talk about some of these. And then we try and extract what the common features are to all of them. And it's very interesting to see what those common things are. One of them is that all of these master healers are rooted in a conventional spiritual practice. So rather than saying, you know, I'm a star being from Beta Centauri, they'll say, I studied with a Zen master for 30 years. You know, they'll be rooted in some sort of conventional spiritual practice. That's one striking point of similarity. Also, they often can produce distant effects. So many of the people they work with are not right there in the room with them. They're a long way away. But somehow the shift in the healer's awareness is able to catalyze a shift in the condition of the person who's a long way away. Another characteristic of these master healers is they seem to be able to produce their effects consistently. So, for example, there's one called John Sewell, who I interviewed, who lives in, I think, in Virginia, and he was talking about cancer. He said, "Oh, cancer, yeah, that's easy." For him, that's easy. For him, to see a tumor dissolve is a matter of sometimes a few moments or a few days. Wow. But consistently, he can do that with tumors. Others have other things they seem to be able to do particularly well. And also, they all seem to have gone through some sort of mentorship from a master, from a teacher, from the teachers in a tradition. So they've all gone through some kind of apprenticeship to get where they are. So those are some of the characteristics we find are common to all these master healers.
And so are these master healers basically just a chosen few, or can just any individual maybe learn something about their own personal power to heal themselves through these master healers and what we know about them?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Juanita, because 20 years ago, I thought that healing and that kind of healing ability could not be taught. It was a God-given gift. Now, I think I was wrong, and I think that actually healing can be taught, or at least enhanced, because I simply heard many, many people who have been through the energy psychology trainings or Donna Eden's in energy medicine, and they said, I began studying with Donna Eden 10 years ago, and I had no ability at all, no clue about the strange thing to do with healing, and now it's effortless for me. So it seems as though there are principles, they can be taught, and people really can enhance their healing abilities and healing powers, both the ones they have themselves and for others. So there's a sort of set of principles that you do. You do A, B, C, D, and D. You go through these classes, pick up these skills, get better at these things, your observation becomes better, and with practice, yeah, it looks now as though healing can be taught and is being taught successfully to many people.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Whether you've already written your manuscript or are contemplating writing one, you will need to create a book proposal. ReaderViews has a coaching service to help you create an enticing book proposal for your work of fiction or nonfiction. In fact, ReaderViews will even submit your book proposal to publishers and agents they have created a relationship with, and then they promise to pursue these submissions. Go to readerviews.com today and click on Services for Authors to find out more information on book proposals and how ReaderViews can help you. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Dawson Church, author of Soul Medicine, Awakening Your Inner Blueprint for Abundant Health and Energy. And you can find out more about Dawson through his website, soulmedicine.net. Do you think there is a certain amount of faith that plays into making that leap to be a healer yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Faith plays a big role in it, both your own spiritual faith and your belief in what you're doing. Just for instance, I was working with somebody recently who was suffering from a severe migraine. And so I was doing EFT with them, and I had them doing this EFT tapping on these 14 acupoints, and I asked how the migraine was doing, and they said, well, the migraine was not doing very much better. So I said, well, tap on the other side of your body. So they tapped on the other side and said, oh, it's gone. Hmm. Now, EFT theory says it doesn't really matter which side you tap on, but maybe the person just believing that the other side was more effective had a bigger effect. I don't know. But often if people have no luck tapping on one side, I'll say tap on the other side, and they will have a big shift. So theoretically it should make a difference, but just engaging their belief in whatever way. Now, if you engage your belief as well, say you believe in God, if you pray and pray to God as well as doing the tapping, as well as having the intention, as well as meditating, as well as contemplation or reading spiritual books, all these things together, I think, have an even more powerful effect. So whatever you can do to increase your belief, increase your faith, increase your energy level is bound to have an effect.
So how can you actually tell if someone is very much aligned and has a good connection between their spirit and their physical body?
Yeah, it's a critical thing, and there are people who seem to have a very tenuous connection between the two. Others have a very strong connection. And I think that taking a good, hard look at yourself and seeing how effectively you function in both these worlds. Some people function very effectively in the physical world, others in the metaphysical world. And, of course, the trick is to be fully present in the physical world, fully effective in the physical world, and also know you're a being of spirit, you're a being of glorious potential, that you're living this life of potential, but in this material body. And when you have that perspective, when everything that happens to you is part of your transcendent self, a transcendent experience, it's a very different perspective from being stuck in the bills, and then the challenges,
mm-hmm.
and with the kids, and with the job, and all the other things that might normally tie you down.
Mm-hmm.
So living life dancing between the material world and the spiritual world, and knowing that, hey, you know, I'm dancing here in the material world for a while, but then I'm going to take some time and do a spiritual cleanse and orientation, and just be in the spiritual world for a while, and be in my soul, be in myself, be rooted in my core, let the love and peace and joy that is at the center of my being pour out into my external world. When you start to really combine these two worlds and be able to move with ease between them, then suddenly your whole life has a set of resources for your material challenges you didn't have before. And also your material challenges then are taken into your spiritual life and help enrich and deepen that. So there's a lot to be said for a vibrant connection between the two.
And there's just there's something so very obvious about someone that can dance effectively, multidimensionally like that. I mean, there's a magnetic quality to a person like that.
Yes, absolutely. And it's, again, if your outer life, material life, is starved for the input of your soul, it becomes a very arid place. You might be acting not from your heart. You might not be coming from love. You might have challenges with other people because you aren't able to move that space of deep connection that says we're both beings and we're both souls and we're both on this material level, and let's connect from that soul level, and that will inform and strengthen and infuse our material contacts. So all kinds of things happen when you're at this level, both of spirit and energy and of form.
Do you think the masses are ready for living multidimensionally like that?
I think that the limitations of the old paradigm are becoming increasingly apparent. I felt over the last while that top-down control and command, power over people rather than shared inner power, all of those old paradigms, I think, are really showing how bankrupt they are. And the bankruptcy of our financial political systems is just a reflection of the bankruptcy of these ways of being. So I think we're in for huge shifts economically, politically, spiritually, culturally, medically, and they're all happening together. You know, the Renaissance happened in just a very short time, about 25 years. Suddenly, the entire landscape, education changed, law changed, all the aspects of human function changed. Of course, art and culture changed beyond recognition during the Renaissance. But it was all happening during a very short period, and very few people at the time realized they were in the middle of this huge shift. We are in the middle, I believe, of one of those enormous cultural shifts after which everything will look different, and only a few people realize it. So, yeah, we're in the middle of it, and I think that things will look very different in 10 years from now.
It really is a fascinating time to be on this planet, isn't it?
I would choose no other.
Yeah. Well, you know, since we're kind of talking about the climate that we're in right now, let's talk a little about stress. Because from what I understand, this is something you consider to be one of the biggest health problems. And right now, you know, the stress level with most people is at an all-time high. So would you talk about the detrimental effects of stress and maybe how we can navigate through these challenging times to lessen our stress?
When I hook people up here at Soul Medicine Institute to buy a feedback machine, I can literally measure the effects on their brain and on their heart of every thought and feeling they're having. And Juanita, those effects are immediate and dramatic. Somebody has a negative thought and their heart rate variability will change dramatically, or their EEG reader from their brain will change quickly and just jump all over the place, different directions. So when you're stressed, when you think stressful thoughts, have stressful feelings, have experiences which you can't discharge the energy of, those things produce dramatic effects in your physical body. And so stress is, for example, say you have a disease. If you have a disease and you have stress, you then have a double whammy. Or if you have a psychological problem, say you're going through a mentally hard time, or you have a tough time with your marriage or at work, and you also have a bunch of other stress, then you have more risk factors. So whatever else you, however healthy or sick or functional or dysfunctional you are in various parts of your life, if you add stress or add lots of stress, it really affects things. One famous study done by a big HMO called Kaiser Permanente, I mentioned them earlier, studied 17,000 adults, massive 10-year study, and it found that those people that had high levels of unresolved emotional stress from their childhood had much higher rates of cancer, heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, hepatitis, and all kinds of other problems. So stress and the inability to discharge those emotional traumas leaves a really severe imprint on the body later on. That's why I so strongly advocate that you meditate, you pray, change your beliefs, look at your self-limiting beliefs, look at your self-talk. If you are telling yourself, I absolutely love and adore you every day, why not? You know,
mm-hmm.
What is your self-talk? When something happens, you hear people say, oh, I'm such a klutz. Never say that. Never say that about yourself. Never say, if my children say something bad about themselves, like I'm such a klutz, what I would say to them from an early age was, nobody's allowed to say that about my children. And my kids would look up and think, oh, that's me.
Well, it's so self-sabotaging.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have all these self-sabotaging beliefs down there. And then, of course, we have people around us at work and in our houses sometimes who will happily reinforce those self-sabotaging messages.
Mm-hmm.
So having the strength to pull yourself out of that, and when you hear those things in yourself, hear those negative voices. Like, you know, I went to New Zealand earlier this year, and I have this very fierce inner critic. And so I left the airport in my rental car, and I suddenly realized, oh, goodness, This is a left-hand drive country, not a right-hand drive country.
Oh,
these rental cars and all the steering wheels are on the wrong side of the car. Oh, no, what do I do now? My inner critic said, you won't last 10 minutes without having an accident. So I was so fearful when he said that I went inside and did something I've never done before. I bought trip insurance. And I've always declined that offer when I rent a car. They said, do you want trip insurance? I say, no bother. But I went back inside and I got trip insurance because my inner critic had me so convinced I'd be, you know, just a smoldering pile of wreckage in the first half hour. So I get on the motorway in Auckland, New Zealand, driving along. After about 20 minutes, I realize, you know, I'm doing just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having no problem driving on the left-hand side at all. See, inner critic, see?
Yeah.
So you know what my inner critic said?
What?
It said, oh, you just got used to driving on the left-hand side very, very quickly. This means for sure when you get back to America, you'll have an accident in the first 30 minutes.
Oh, my God.
These inner critics who are merciless, you know.
Yeah.
So now I have a good time laughing at mine. Fortunately, I mean, actually named mine. Give mine a name, and I call him Hal.
Hal, I have heard that's a great thing to do, to personify that critic.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But we all have these voices, and they can distract us. They can sabotage us.
Yeah.
So when someone else says something to us that's negative, immediately it's reinforced by our own negative self concepts and self images. So the big challenge is to become aware of that inner critic, laugh at it, make friends with it if at all possible, maybe even enlist it. Like now, I give Hal a job. Hal's job is to make me happy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So you can even domesticate these creatures and
these rebellious
to your advantage. Yes.
That is so funny. Well, I guess in a way you end up stepping out of a victim sort of mentality when you come to terms with that inner critic.
You do, and you say, I'm the boss here,
and
I have some control. Now, I have to say, I find I don't always have control over those thoughts and feelings. There are recurrent negative ones, but at least you can begin to get some control and then more control and then train yourself to have better control. And that's when things like EFT come in. When you have that negative thought or that negative charge around someone or something, just do some tapping, and you'll find that usually it'll just dissipate in a few moments.
How can someone find an EFT practitioner in their area?
If you go to my website for my nonprofit, it's soulmedicineinstitute.org. There are lists there of EFT practitioners, all sorts of other therapies like quantum touch, even energy medicine. And if you just look through those lists of practitioners and find one in your area, and then again use the methods that I describe in Soul Medicine to find your ideal practitioner, you'll be in good shape.
Mm-hmm. Great. So, Dawson, what do you think are some of the most exciting possibilities for healing that we will see in the coming future? I mean, you've mentioned EFT. I know you're very involved with that. But what else can we expect?
I think we will see a recognition in medicine of the importance of emotional and spiritual factors in healing. And right now, that those factors are not all that present, but they're coming into medicine. I visited a state-of-the-art cancer center last year called MD Anderson Cancer Clinic, a famous cancer clinic treatment center. And so you walk down the hallways, you're looking at all the labels on the doors. You see the oncology department and the radiation department and the energy medicine department, where you can go for a chakra tune-up, or for EFT, or for an energy medicine treatment.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's coming in there. I think the other big potential is I'm doing a study of Iraq veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and the website where they can sign up for it is called stressproject.org. And at the Stress Project website and in that practice, we're seeing increasing interest from the VA, the Veterans Administration, and military hospitals. Because they're saying, you know, we don't have very good tools to help treat these people with PTSD. What do we do? So I think increasingly in the next few years, big institutions are going to start to pick up on the healing power of these kinds of therapy. And the big recognition is that emotional trauma and spiritual distress has very real physical consequences. And that's the big conceptual shift we make. And once we make that shift, then suddenly we begin to treat people that walk in with all kinds of physical diseases. We begin to treat them emotionally and spiritually as well as medically.
Mm-hmm. That is a big leap from a field that really up to this point, you know, is kind of spiraled down to be more basically owned by a pharmaceutical industry at this point.
It's very mechanistic. And for example, these antidepressant drugs, this group of antidepressant drugs, SSRIs, are designed to prevent the reuptake of this substance called serotonin. It's sort of a feel-good substance. And they say, well, if we can inhibit the dismantling of the serotonin molecules, then people will feel better. But what happens is when we find do a piece of research and we discover serotonin, immediately if we medicalize it, we look then for a pill we can use to affect serotonin. What I'm arguing for in my book, Soul Medicine, and my other books as well, is I'm saying, hey, let's look for the psychological states, the emotional states, the spiritual states that boost serotonin. Let's not look first to a pill. Let's look first to ourselves, to our own resources, to our souls, and see what effects we can have. Because what we're finding as we measure these biochemicals now is that shifting your psychology dramatically shifts your physiology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm really seeing happening now, is we're understanding that we don't need to medicalize everything. We don't need to always look for the pill.
Mm-hmm.
We can look for our bodies to produce all of those same molecules just with psychological change.
How empowering that is to know that we have that power and that potential within ourselves to change our biology.
Yes, and people don't realize this, but again, if you sit in my chair and watch heart rate monitors, watch EEG readouts, watch people's cortisol levels change. I was looking at a chart last night from a young Iraq veteran, and when he began work with us, his testosterone levels are very low, and his levels of his main cell repair hormone called DHEA were very low.
Mm-hmm.
After just 6 sessions, suddenly his testosterone levels shot way up, his DHEA cell repair levels quadrupled, and his cortisol levels became very normal. So if you are in a position to look at this research, you see that there are these really direct physical things that happen in your body with each thought you think. If you could watch your heart rate monitor in my office, I tell you, you would never dare think another negative thought again. Moment you do, it shifts.
I think we all need to make an appointment to see you.
Yeah, unfortunately, I only do research. I don't treat anybody directly, but I'll get on the website. There are tons of resources of people who do treat people.
Oh, that is great. So, you know, I imagine with all of this new information and research, and really within probably the next 5, 10, 15 years, we're going to see a dramatic shift in like a freestanding medical center and what that's going to look like. Are you anticipating more integrative clinic type of situation?
Yes, and in the book I actually do describe some of these sorts of clinics and what they look like, and there are quite a number of them around already.
Yeah.
And they do focus on the emotional aspects of where people are. One story I tell is from a urologist at Kaiser Permanente who had a young woman come in with a bladder infection. And he noticed looking at her chart that she'd had an average of 2 bladder infections a year for the previous few years.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked her if there might not be an emotional issue that underlay her bladder infection. And she described being raped by an uncle when she was about, I think, 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
And so he worked on this emotional distress. He worked on helping her release this emotional trauma. And as it turned out, her bladder infection got better without drugs, and he checked her chart again a few years later. She never came back for that problem. So again, looking at increasingly I expect to see these kinds of, even conventional doctors, looking at these emotional aspects of healing and how they can have leverage on that part of the spectrum. And often I think it'll affect the physical part too. So I see the healing center of the future really bolstering spiritual change, psychological release, emotional trauma release, and having that as a primary way in which it helps people get better, we'll still have all these wonderful drugs, we'll still have our fabulous surgeries, we'll still have all the tools of modern medicine and even better ones in years to come. And the combination of these advanced medical tools with psychological and spiritual and emotional medicine will be a powerful combination indeed. Mm.
We are really on the edge of a renaissance, as you're talking about, aren't we? I mean, the future 10, 20 years from now, people are going to be very, very different than they are today.
They will recognize this, and for example, I think we will see the quality of spiritual connection really being emphasized. Don't have an argument out of your left brain about what you think is right. Move it to your heart and come from that perspective and see what works for everyone. So this might seem like a utopian ideal, but as people realize that this is the way your body works best, the way societies can work best, then suddenly our whole global picture can shift, and all of the wars and social conflicts are simply individual personal conflicts writ large.
Mm-hmm.
And as we increasingly solve our individual personal conflicts within ourselves, then the world outside of us becomes a lot more peaceful. In your family, you'll be a much better agent for positive change if you've resolved all the family dynamics and problems within yourself. You know, so you always look in yourself. I teach a class called The Energies of Love for couples, and I really help them focus not on the other person, but on just releasing the emotional traumas and tensions within themselves. And suddenly, once you do that, your couple relationship changes dramatically. Your family relationship, your work relationship, all of these things can shift. I had a guy in one of my classes this last weekend, and I asked him to score his biggest emotional trauma, which was his relationship with his boss, on a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 being no trauma and 10 being the maximum possible emotional trauma. And he said, it's a 10 out of 10, I hate my boss. So we did EFT with him for about 3 minutes, and
uh-huh.
He was down to a 0.
Wow.
What about his boss? And he had nothing, you know. He said, you know, my boss has a lot of challenges in her life.
Oh, wow.
She has, you know, so he moved from hating his boss to realizing, feeling empathy with her challenges. Now, that is the kind of place where you start to create a peaceful world from.
Mm-hmm.
So resolving it in yourself. Don't try and fix the boss or the wife or the kid or the country. Fix it in yourself first, and suddenly the boss, the kid, and the country will all come right.
Yes. Those are powerful, powerful words. And I know that this is something that you talk about in one of your other books, Healing the Heart of the World.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to have you come back at some point and talk with us about that book.
That's a wonderful book. That explores the link between personal healing and planetary healing. And Healing the Heart of the World was a project I loved working on.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. There is everyone that is in this field that has something to say. You have compiled it into this book. It is really fantastic.
Yeah, there's a whole legion of people out there who are doing their best to wake the whole society up to the power of these techniques. And now the encouraging thing, too, is that it used to be that we would say, well, all this energy stuff is great, but there's no science behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're saying this is the cutting edge of science. This is showing us, the science is showing us these quantum realities that tell us of the potential for who we can be that's far beyond our old limitations. And so science has moved from sort of being thought of as the opponent of spirituality to showing us how integrated we are and how when we engage spirituality, the material world can change very rapidly and very, very much in our favor.
And quite frankly, this is probably where the real change is going to take place in the world today.
Definitely,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, very interesting.
Starts in the heart and it goes up from there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I want to mention your website. Again, it's soulmedicine.net, and you also, Dustin, mentioned soulmedicineinstitute.org, so our audience can check out both of those websites to find out more about you. And I can't believe it. I'm looking at the time, and it just went by so quickly today. I knew it would. I knew it would. So if you wanted to just share any final thoughts you have with our audience and maybe give them, you know, an idea of what they can do today, right now, to start improving their health.
I would go to one of those websites, take the Soul Connection imagery and then just look at the things you can do to love yourself. How can I love myself more? Where am I stressed? Where am I tense? Where am I out of touch with my spirituality? And then let your soul come into those places. Often the places of the maximum wounding and pain are the places of the maximum love and healing once you let the soul in. So I would say, look, do an assessment of your life. See where you're not letting that be true. And let that grace just flood you. And you'll be amazed what can happen when you do that.
Dawson, thank you so much for coming and talking with us today. This has really been an enlightening conversation.
Thank you again.
Okay, thank you. All right, listeners, that's been Dawson Church for his second time here on Inside Scoop Live, a wonderful, wonderful interview. His new book, Soul Medicine, Awakening Your Inner Blueprint for Abundant Health and Energy, is out now on Energy Psychology Press. You can purchase it through Dawson's website, soulmedicine.net, as well as the online and local booksellers. So please do check it out. This is very transformational information, wonderful book, and your life will change. So thank you once again for listening to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watts, and until next time.